But first to one of the big stories in that patch, this week's announcement by President Trump of his proposed plan for Israel-Palestine. Characteristically, he describes it as the deal of the century. But the response from many other quarters is much more mixed. There have been cautious words from European leaders, terse statements from the UN, and a few instances of outright rejection by Turkey, and of course by the Palestinian Authority, who's really quite outraged. But as some long-time observers of the Middle East have noted, many Arab countries, countries which once fully embraced the Palestinian cause, have reacted with neither enthusiasm nor anger, more apathy, and in some cases even support. So what's changed and why? Caroline Rose is an analyst with the online international affairs commentator Geopolitical Futures. In a piece this week, she argues the response to the plan says a lot about the new political realities emerging in the Middle East, which a lot of people simply haven't caught up on. Caroline Rose, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you very much for having me.
Could you give us a brief snapshot of the plan, please? What new ground, if any, does it break?
Certainly. So it essentially establishes or reimposes the status quo between Israel and Palestine. And it is certainly more advantageous to Israel. What it does is that it keeps the capital of Israel undivided. It allows the old city in the Holy Basin to be Israeli. It establishes another state of Palestine, but they only give Abu Dis, which is the east suburb of Jerusalem, to the Palestinians. They have not necessarily outreached the Palestinian Authority or nor any kind of Palestinian parties involved. And all settlements remain under Israeli rule, something that further entrenches something that the current ruling party in Israel has been trying to do over the past few years. The Palestinians don't necessarily get much out of this deal, nor is it within their interest to sign on to it.
Now, just something I can't quite work out. Does this plan in effect say there will be an independent Palestinian state? Like if Netanyahu accepts this, do they then in effect accept that there is going to be an independent Palestinian state for the remaining 70%?
It's being debated heavily among experts. So it's a 50-page report that the United States came out with yesterday or 2 days ago. It's 50 pages. But the language is incredibly ambiguous in that it talks a lot about Palestinian governance and trying to increase Palestinian autonomy, while at the same time, of course, fashioning this as a two-state solution. So yes, there would be an independent Palestine. But if you look at the map, you can see how governance would be very hard to implement, not only because it is reimposing the status quo that is in the Israeli state, especially with the conditions under which Palestinians live under. But on top of that, pockets of Israeli settlements are within the Palestinian territory that they're claiming to be this new state. So governance would be increasingly difficult to impose. But yes, that's what this deal is trying to get at.
Okay, so clearly the plan favors Israel, but it has had marked support among Gulf Arab states in particular, which is really causing people who know it are sort of raising their eyebrows. What kind of support?
So, yes, this is a really fascinating element of this. A lot of Arab Gulf states have welcomed the opportunity to incorporate and implement a peace process. Now, if we remember back in 2002, they initiated the peace process, although it wasn't necessarily entirely successful. So they've welcomed this peace effort, despite it being very disadvantageous to the Palestinians. And they've welcomed the United States backing the peace accord. Saudi Arabia said that their support of the Palestinians was steadfast, but they walked a tight line and said that they appreciated the peace efforts of what the United States was doing and that they would support continued peace efforts. The UAE said that it was an important starting point. Qatar welcomed it. However, they did say that Palestine did need East Jerusalem as a condition. Egypt as well, they welcomed it. Morocco, although that is not a Gulf state, they also welcomed it. So yes, we've seen a lot of Arab Gulf states really give it's not necessarily a green light, but I want to say more of a yellow light
Well, I mean, the Egyptians, for instance, appreciated the continuous efforts of the Trump administration, but they did say that the need was to restore to Palestinians their, quote, full legitimate rights through the establishment of a sovereign independent state. And in fact, Saudi Arabia wasn't dissimilar. So, I mean, are you really saying that you're surprised? And there are a lot of commentators in the same line as what you're writing. You're surprised that there's been any welcome at all. You think in times gone by, there would have been an outright rejection and said, this is no way to even begin the possibility of discussions. Is that what has shifted?
Yes, exactly. They're breaking from historical precedent. For decades, this is how the Middle East operated.
It's really been about a half a century, hasn't it?
Exactly, yes. I mean, even I was thinking today, you know, I was talking with my boss, George Friedman. We were talking about how this was a post-World War II reality, but really even after the First World War that this was the reality, after there was the Hussein revolts in 1916 to 1918, after the mandate states imposed by Britain and France.
And the Balfour Declaration.
And so, you know, after this reality was imposed in the region, you saw widespread Arab resistance against foreign occupation. And then, of course, this then spilled into the Israeli state. And so you had widespread Arab support surrounding resisting the Israeli state.
So what's changed?
That's a good question. There are a few things that have changed. And I want to preface it with this. Saudi Arabia, Gulf states have been silently cooperating with Israel for quite some time. This isn't necessarily a new development within the regional dynamic. It has been an accumulation of years of security cooperation, intelligence cooperation, and back-channeling between the Gulf and Israel. And I don't mean to say all of the Gulf states, but primarily Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and a bit of Qatar. Now, after 9/11, the security situation in the Middle East entirely changed. And then that was exacerbated by the 2011 Arab uprisings, otherwise known as the Arab Spring, that also changed states' prioritization of domestic security and economic recovery. So you started to see after 9/11 and after 2011, the shifting of the priorities, both domestic and foreign policy, for Gulf states and other Arab states in the region. Then you started to see the rise of Iran and the expansion of what they like to call the Shiite Crescent, which is essentially a land bridge between Iran and the Mediterranean, where they try and support Shiite militias like Hezbollah, the popular mobilization forces in Iraq, and different Shiite militias in Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. That started to become the main priority for Gulf states, of course, the United States, as many know, and of course, Israel. And so, you know, the mantra of the enemy is my friend,
yes,
really started to apply with a lot of these Gulf states in aligning with Israeli interests. And I don't want to say aligning with Israel, because certainly that goes against years and years of their foreign policy record, their ideological record. However, there was and there is a lot of quiet cooperation with the Israeli state.
Well, I mean, the Israelis have been saying this for years, and people have, I think, sort of said, yes, maybe, maybe they're gilding the lily. But it clearly that existential threat that Israel feels about Iran is very much on display in Saudi Arabia and the UAE, isn't it? And that is clearly fundamentally shifting the politics.
It is. And it's not necessarily sectarian as much anymore either. I mean, the thing that really also exacerbated this was when Iran started to fund by bit and indirectly the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and some factions of Hamas in Palestine, which was already split between the West Bank and Gaza. You have Hamas and then you have the Palestinian Authority. So Iran started to exploit a lot of these vulnerabilities and opportunities that existed in Palestine. And all these Gulf states, particularly Saudi Arabia and the UAE, noticed this and recognized that while, of course, on record and while, of course, ideologically, they have to support Palestine, they also should start to distance themselves and look at this more pragmatically.
I mean, it's notable that Iran and Turkey have denounced Trump's peace plans in no uncertain terms, you know, very predictable. Is there genuine support, do you judge, for Palestinians in those countries, or is this just about politics?
It's about posturing as well. I mean, it's quite interesting. Today, the Turkish parliament even passed a bill condemning the recent peace proposal, which, you know, you don't necessarily see that in any of the Gulf states. You haven't really seen much with the Arab League either. And then meanwhile, you know, you have the Turkish parliament that is so, you know, against this peace proposal. And then you've seen multiple Iranian ministers come out talking against this deal and talking how it should be a failure and how there should be more Arab resistance. So I do think that there is on policy and ideologically alliance with the Palestinian cause. I think that it helps their foreign policy's agenda. It helps them try and achieve a certain level of regional status. However, these are both non-Arab states, and Palestine, it's an Arab identity. So it is a bit ironic. I mean, I don't necessarily mean to exclude Jordan, for example. They said that they would not support the deal unless it reverted back to pre-1967 borders. Syria rejected it outright. There are many Arab states that were opposed to this deal, but in particular in the Gulf, which has always been a bedrock of support for Palestine, that was missing. That was missing in the response.
It must be terribly dispiriting for Palestinians around the world to see this shifting. If you were a Palestinian hoping to really advance the cause of an independent state, how do you think you'd be feeling right now?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, if you look at really the question, what is next? With this 50-page deal, there's no timeline. There's no real mechanism for it to be implemented. There was no reference to the United Nations Security Council. There was no reference to dialogue with the Palestinians either. So right now, the expectation is for the Israeli Knesset.
It's extraordinary, really, that, isn't it? It's just extraordinary.
And so the expectation from here on out is the Israeli parliament to essentially give the green light for annexation in the West Bank and the Jordan Valley. And from there, they would handle the boundaries and defining the contours of this new Palestinian state with no guarantee of dialogue with Palestinians. And the one bulwark, the one, you know, theater of resistance that the Palestinians once had with these Gulf Arab states, they don't necessarily have that guarantee anymore.
Caroline Rose, thank you very much indeed for that insight, those set of insights.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And Caroline Rose is an analyst with Geopolitical Futures, and we won't let this story go away, I promise you. So we'll keep following that up with different guests